Well, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of things. First of all, I have to say the torch has been passed because the BBC World Service is no longer available via shortwave in the United States. I know this was discussed on NPR already, so it can be fairly be considered having been covered. Wow, too many participles. But this program is still on shortwave, so we are the World Service now. The torch of world servitude has been passed to this broadcast, and I will attempt to do my very best to do whatever I'm supposed to be doing. Secondly, I found while I was away that this broadcast is now finally, I'm only going to use one finally, but I'm implying 14, finally being carried in the city of Washington, D.C., and I am so proud to welcome WAMU officially to the ever-growing but ever-shrinking LeShow Network. I don't know how we do it, but it stays stable even though we keep adding stations. Something's dropping off somewhere. And that's not a quote from Dick Cheney. That's me talking. But I'm delighted, and I was very pleased that J. Edgar got to be heard in Washington, D.C., because I don't know if you folks knew about the late director of the FBI. He was an interesting cat. He was an interesting cat. Anyway, we are back live at the LeShow Dome, which, as you may know, is a non-functioning dome, just like the one in London. The Millennium Dome is destined, I've now found out, to be torn down. So that billion-dollar investment in celebrating the millennium that the New York Times castigated Los Angeles for not making is paying off. London's going to end up just where Los Angeles started out, with a parking lot. Hello, welcome to the show.
You. our chair, filling out our phone. And I think about dying like I never did before. Think about dark rooms, strangers' faces. Nurse wearing rubber gloves, drinking Diet Coke. I got a sandbag sitting there in the middle of my throat. I think of friends' faces, and I know I'm not alone.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the July 1st edition of the show. And, it's summertime. You don't need me to point that out, but maybe you're feeling a little bit guilty about not getting enough done, lazing around too much, reading too much trash literature. There's an oxymoron for you. You're not getting enough done. Well, there's a danger in getting too much done. Case in point, Thomas Midgley, a chemical engineer, an American, I'm proud to say, who, according to John McNeil in the new book, Something New Under the Sun, Thomas Midgley had more impact on the atmosphere, on the Earth's atmosphere, than any other organism in the history of the planet. Okay? Here, listen to this record of accomplishment. In 1921, Dr. Midgley figured out that gasoline would burn better if tetraethyl lead were added. By the 1970s, most North Americans had elevated levels of lead in their blood. In 1930-31, Dr. Midgley developed Freon, a non-toxic, non-flammable gas that could be used in refrigerators, air conditioners, and aerosol cans. He demonstrated its harmlessness You'll recognize this as my favorite stunt. He demonstrated its harmlessness by filling his lungs with Freon, exhaling it, and extinguishing a candle. Decades later, of course, the destruction of the ozone layer was traced to Freon and similar chlorofluorocarbons. Filled his lungs with Freon, ladies and gentlemen. Here, look. It's safe. And in 1940, Dr. Midgley contracted polio, which left him wheelchair-bound. He applied his ingenuity to his predicament and devised a lifting mechanism that employed ropes and pulleys so he could hoist himself out of bed and into his chair without assistance. He later strangled himself in the contraption and died suspended in midair. So you can, ladies and gentlemen, accomplish too much. And so, you know, relax. Take it easy. Chill. I've been away, so some loose ends to tie up. The story that was repeated here about the White House planning to serve genetically modified food was not true. We were victimized by a spoof. Hey, you know, you can spoof a spoofer. And on the other hand, I am advised by an emailer that my contention that George W. Bush, when he was a baseball owner, did campaign for a salary cap, thereby providing an interesting irony with his insistence that California energy prices not be capped. That was true. He did campaign for such a cap when he was a baseball owner. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. It's just like the news business. Here's some things we've missed. You may have missed. I don't know. As I say, catching up. A possible solution to the overheating of the planet? Move the planet. All you have to do, this is from a British newspaper, The Observer, just hurtle a few comets at Earth and its orbit will be altered. Our world will then be sent spinning into a safer, colder part of the solar system. This is the brainchild of a group of NASA engineers and American astronomers who say their plan could add another 6 billion years to the shelf life of Earth. Here now, Dr. Greg Laughlin of the NASA Ames Research Center. The technology is not at all far-fetched. It involves the same techniques that people now suggest could be used to deflect asteroids or comets heading towards Earth. We don't need raw power to move Earth. We just require delicacy of planning and maneuvering. And getting the numbers right, let's face it. The plan put forward by Dr. Laughlin involves carefully directing a comet or asteroid. I'm sorry. It's a serious plan, so that it sweeps close past our planet and transfers some of its gravitational energy to Earth. Earth's orbital speed would increase as a result, and we would move to a higher orbit away from the sun. Engineers would then direct their comet so that it passed close to Jupiter or Saturn, where the reverse process would occur. It would pick up energy from one of these giant planets. Later, its orbit would bring it back to Earth, and the process would be repeated. Oh, I see. This is not just a one-time stunt. This is a system, you see. In the short term, the plan provides an ideal solution to global warming. Although the team was seriously concerned with a more drastic danger, the sun is destined to heat up in about a billion years. Talk about warming. And so seriously compromise our biosphere by frying us. Well, that's a billion years. Let them worry about it. Let our grand 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 great 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 grand 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 great great grand worry about those. So let's move the Earth, ladies and gentlemen. What do you say? Come on. You know, forget a comet. If we all just pushed. A follow-up on the constant series of the welter, if you will, of stories about whether or not there's a problem with cell phones. This also from a British newspaper. You know, they love to alarm us on a Sunday. But I don't know if you could necessarily... This was, first of all, on a Monday British paper, so it wasn't alarm day. And second of all, well, the world's largest mobile telephone manufacturers have been patenting devices to reduce the risk of brain tumors among users while rejecting claims of any health hazards resulting from their products. Engineers for Nokia, Ericsson, and Motorola have all invented new components to shield users from radiation emissions from the handsets. One application Nokia has lodged with the U.S. Patent Office notes that it has been suggested, quote, that continuous exposure to radio frequency irradiation could lead to a development of malignant tumor. Nice use of the passive tense. It has been suggested. The patents show that the manufacturers have been working on radiation-reducing components for at least 8 years. The companies maintain there's no contradiction between their public stance of no harm and the existence of the patents. They're just hedging their bets. And I for one, I'm grateful for the bet hedging. Because, you know, reassurances. My favorite quote of the day from the Sunday news shows, the Sunday Yak Fests, comes from Speaker of the House. He's still Speaker of the House. They didn't change control of the House. I'm sorry, Washington. I do keep up. Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert, who announced today, quote, "Sometimes you got to do the right thing," unquote. A lot of sermons will be based on that, I'm sure. Sometimes he did not elaborate as to what you got to do the rest of the time, unfortunately, and was not probed on the subject. See, this is my problem with journalism today. Where's the guy that asks, "Well, thank you, Speaker, but what do you do the rest of the time?" It did not happen. And I brought up on this broadcast some time ago my frustration with the continued pace. Talk about trying to accomplish too much. The continued frenetic pace of innovation in the field of shower control technology in hotel rooms, leaving one in the position where one, every time you check into a hotel room, I'm going to switch from the one to the you here. Don't hold it against me. You're constantly faced with having to learn a new system and get scalded until you do. And I called, in a call for innovation, a call for one final innovation, I called for keypads, like we have in so much of the rest of our lives, where you could just punch in the temperature, punch in the water intensity, punch save, and then that's your setting as long as you're in that room. An emailer sent me a catalog from a manufacturer which indicates that for polished chrome, such a device does exist and costs $590. So it's an issue of cost. If we all, after we got finished moving the earth, if we all just ordered these, I'm sure we could drive the price down faster than the price of digital television. About which more in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. But first, the property here in Southern California has been hot. Look, it's right here in the newspaper. Comedian Ellen DeGeneres has sold the Ojai home she shared with actress Anne Heche before the couple's breakup last August. The asking price was $2.75 million. DeGeneres has been spending less time in Ojai because of her plans to host the Emmy Awards. Because of her plans. Maybe she'll actually start rehearsing now, but just her plans have kept her away from Ojai. Those are very demanding plans, hosting the Emmy Awards. And her return this fall to weekly TV on the new CBS comedy, The Ellen Show. She will star in and serve as an executive producer of the show, which is scheduled to run on Fridays. It's about an internet executive who's gay. No, sorry, who exchanges the stress of her big city lifestyle for the slower pace of Ojai. No, for the slower pace of her quiet hometown. Yeah, now the real estate column gets into the irony. DeGeneres is trading Ojai for a busier life in her Hollywood Hills home. The Ojai home, which was sold to a family from Brentwood, has four bedrooms, including two master suites in 4,000 square feet. It's on about 10 acres with avocados and citrus orchards, flower gardens, rolling lawns, a pool, and oak trees. The home once used for a photo layout with Martha Stewart. Did Martha actually come, do you think? Is white and resembles a French farmhouse with its beamed ceilings and angry farmsteaders. No, porches, excuse me. The house also has mountain and orchard views. Okay. Rennie Harlan, who directed the movie Driven, has sold his longtime home in the Beverly Hills area, near the homes of Marlon Brando and Jack Nicholson, for close to its asking price. Actor Matt Lattanzi, former husband of Olivia Newton-John, has listed his Malibu home. I don't think so. I think that's as hot as it gets. We're going to stop right there with whoever that was at the top. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, in the top of the week's news, some technology information you may have missed. AdMail, a new technology marketed by Australian online marketing firm Riva, enables advertisers, listen to this, this is clever, enables advertisers to intercept email messages as they enter the mail server and wrap them in advertising content tailored to the recipient's demographic profile. Riva Networks CEO Robert Pickup, I'm not writing these, I'm reading them, says the concept has proven more effective than other online advertising methods. Quote, because the advertising is embedded within a regular email and not a separate email message from an advertiser, users are more likely to open the message and hence be exposed to the advertising. Pickup says he doesn't think consumers will be annoyed by the ads inserted into email messages to them. Quote, as long as it's relevant to them. Thank you, Mr. Pickup. We'll let you know. A survey by British computer maker Novatech says one in every four computers has been physically assaulted by its owner. The incidence of willful neglect has always been high, says the owner of a New York computer repair shop. We've always had to deal with computers damaged by people who dump their refreshing beverage on the computer's keyboard. But recently, more instances of intentional abuse, desk rage, are cropping up. Broken keys from people smacking down on the keyboard with an open hand, or sometimes a fist, and a sharp slap delivered to the monitor or the hard drive case. If you smack a machine when the hard drive is spinning, you can kill the hard drive. Ooh. So there is desk rage. Estimated in the millions by another British newspaper. So take it easy, ladies and gentlemen, at your desk, would you please? I said that was finally, but this I have to share with you before we move along, ladies and gentlemen. Japan's best-known monster, Godzilla, is coming to Japanese stores soon in cans. Godzilla meat, actually 3.5 ounces of corned beef, is packaged with pictures of the stomping, fire-breathing, irradiated dinosaur made famous by Toho movies. Says a spokesman for the Takara Company, people can eat Godzilla and become energetic and powerful. It's got dreams mixed in with fun. They do have a way with the English language, don't they?
There's a brand new car in your driveway and a blonde new girl in your bed. You've everything you ever wished for. Happy little
Now, ladies and gentlemen, It's time for me to read the trades for you. Little thing I do. Because it's where you the truth in American life is found, in the trade magazines that cover our various industries, and so I read them for you. This from National Petroleum News, from the convenience section. I'll read it for you. Keep fries crisp with stealth coating. Lamb Weston's new patented process will ensure the crispness and quality taste of stealth French fries. The thin, transparent coating fries up crisp while insulating the fry to hold heat inside longer than traditional fries. The protective coating also adds additional strength to each fry, minimizing breakage from mishandling while frozen, translating to maximum product yield. These fries are ideal for busy operations. Stealth coating on fries. It's in Petroleum News. It doesn't say what the coating is made from, but it wouldn't be in Petroleum News if it weren't news. Supposition I reach when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Still catching up, ladies and gentlemen, on old business. Talked a few weeks ago about, several times, about economy class syndrome, this thing that afflicts people who fly on long overseas flights and especially ride in coach, where there's less chance to move around and where there's less frequent beverage service. Apparently, drinking a lot of beverages helps thin the blood and keeps you from clotting. The deep vein thrombosis is the formal name of economy class syndrome, and it involves clots that develop in the legs. And what you can do is take aspirin before you get on the plane, which thins the blood. Drink a lot of water. Don't drink booze. I'm sorry. And wear, this is most humiliating, most humiliating of all, it's so humiliating I can't even say it, wear elastic stockings. Thank you very much. American air carriers, by the way, have been slow to note this problem. United Airlines put warning cards in first-class seat pockets about this problem, and it plans to add them to coach this month. That's right. The first-class passengers had a two-month head start on the warning, even though the syndrome, hence the name, mainly afflicts people in coach. Mike Wascom, a spokesman for the Air Transport Association, says the syndrome is not unique to aviation anyway. If airlines need to warn passengers on immobility risks, he says, so too should movie theaters showing Pearl Harbor. A little common sense goes a long way here, he says. I think Denny Hastert's quote is more appropriate right now. Yes, sitting in cars, trains, and buses can lead to deadly clots, but suspicions rise that conditions in the airplane cabin, such as that weird air they pump in that dehydrates you, might accelerate the risk of clotting. At big airports, recent studies have shown a stream of post-flight clot-related deaths. Blood clots are probably much more common than we originally thought, says Dr. John Skurr, a vascular surgeon in London who started a study of 200 passengers in 1998. Yeah, elastic below-the-knee compression stockings may reduce the risk. So, your fellow passengers, ladies and gentlemen, are going to get even uglier. The Supreme Court has stayed the execution of a retarded man while they determine whether or not it is okay to execute the retarded. There's a man with an IQ of 68 and murdered some of his family members after escaping from prison. And an emailer asks me, how does a guy with an IQ of 68 figure out how to escape from prison? Maybe the Supreme Court should take that up. And you probably saw this already, but it's good. The Greater North Dakota Association, the state's Chamber of Commerce, is backing a proposal to take the word North out of the name of the state. Supporters insist the plan would help alter the state's image as a frigid, treeless prairie. Says former state governor Ed Schaefer, people have such an instant thing about how North Dakota is cold and snowy and flat. We're not going to change that overnight, but a name change would get a lot of attention. Personally, I think it would be fun. To change the name, the officials would have to alter the state constitution and the Federal Enabling Act, which let both Dakotas into the Union. Catherine Satrum, a North Dakota travel agency owner and leading advocate of the name change, called the proposal a serious economic development initiative which could have far-ranging benefits to our state's future. Now, I flew over North Dakota this week. It looked nice and brown to me, but I believe in an ad agency near you or near me. The name change campaign is already in full swing.
Hey, Jason.
Tiffany.
Brittany.
Oh, right. Sorry.
No problem. Cool tan.
Thanks. Got it on vacation.
Wow. Mexico?
Nope.
Caribbean?
No way. I was chilling in Dakota.
A Dakota tan? Sure. Every July. Just spread your towel on the prairie and let the Dakota sun do the rest. Dakota. When you stop to think about it, it's not what you think.
Wow, that's real chilling.
Dakota, where winter spends the summer.
Got up this morning, I was feeling.
ladies and gentlemen, of course, the big news on this weekend was the implantation into Vice President Dick Cheney of a what he called a pacemaker plus, what everybody else calls an implantable cardio defibrillator. Went into the hospital on Saturday, came out on Saturday, looking real chipper, and very upbeat doctor reports from his doctors, and very upbeat White House reactions, and very upbeat summary judgment from the Journalati on the Sunday Yak shows. They thought the whole thing has been handled very well, and maybe it has been, and maybe it's maybe there's nothing to worry about. Meanwhile, the air quote president had a one-day summit with the new prime minister of Japan, and the subject of the Kyoto global warming. Speaking of which, it's very warm in here. I'm getting dehydrated. I may get economy class syndrome just from sitting in here for an hour. Hold on. I got to get up and walk around because I don't have the elastic stockings, and it is really warm in here. All right, there we go. Now I won't. Now I won't clot on the air. So there was a discussion of the Kyoto Treaty. As you know, President Bush has come out against it, saying the United States will under no circumstances abide by its requirements that carbon dioxide emissions be reduced or be even plateaued. A report this week said that U.S. carbon dioxide emissions had gone up 2.5% last year, whereas most other industrialized countries kept their carbon dioxide emissions, I think it said, at an even keel. So, and Karl Rove, the president's chief political advisor, has gotten into perhaps the first real bit of hot water in the Bush administration. Karl Rove has held Intel stock and until very recently, and had a meeting in March with representatives of Intel who were interested in the federal government approving a merger that they wanted to conduct. He also, as a holder of Enron stock, sat in on meetings of the Energy Task Force. And the official explanation as to why he held the stock long into his service in the White House was, well, it took the Ethics Commission until June to tell him he should sell the stock. You know, the president often calls his dad, or vice versa. 41 calls 43, or 43 calls 41. Might just be time for another call.
Kennebunk Park Hilton. Yeah. 43, this is 41.
Hey.
And I'd love to engage you in small talk about the coast of Maine up there, but
well, some bonefish around here looking for your pole, you know.
That's great, but I do have to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
And there's kind of a time value to the answer, so
hey, remember what it was like? Urgency and so forth. Shoot.
What's a defibrillator?
Some kind of heart thing, I'm pretty sure. Met Dr. DeBakey once. I think he does them.
Well, Dick Cheney just had one put in. I got the Japanese prime minister in the other room ready to chew my ass off on the Kyoto Treaty, and that's fine. I understand you got to protect the reputation of one of your own cities. I mean, I know I wouldn't like it if he was pissing all over the Chicago Treaty.
Yeah.
But look, this defibrillator, you know, is it a serious thing or what?
Well, you know, you just puzzle out the words like we always used to do. You know, it's a defibrillator, you said.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it must reduce the amount of fibrillation. Maybe Dick Cheney was over-fibrillating. But look, you got people to answer this when you don't need me. Cigarette boat's looking awful lonely out there.
Yeah, I got people, but it's not like it was in Austin. You know, in Austin, I knew I could trust them. You know, they were my team, and I knew we were all playing in the same ball game. Here, you know, who am I supposed to ask? The Surgeon General, a very distinguished black gentleman appointed by my predecessor, who thinks the way to celebrate the 4th of July is to issue a sex ed report.
Don't think so.
Besides, that look sort of creeps me out. You know, doctor in an army uniform. It makes me think he's going to give me a really painful shot.
I think he did.
Yeah, good point. Right. Then there's my good buddy Carl Rove.
Well, there you go. He can pull together all the info for you.
Well, see, Carl's playing in his own ball game now. He's the guy who told me it wasn't a conflict of interest for him to hold Intel stock while talking to the Intel guys, you know?
Yeah.
And now he's telling me that my dip in the polls isn't really a dip in the polls. So for all I know, he's going to tell me a defibrillator is to put back some more fibrillation, you know?
Hadn't been above 72 since we got here. Just perfect. You know, Barr says it's the nicest summer we've had since the year you threw up all over the back porch.
And I'll admit I had a little problem with some Canadian beer back then. But, you know, anyway, you know, I thought maybe Laura should just call up one of those doctor shows on the radio, you know, use another name. No one knows what she sounds like anyway. Just ask the host what a defibrillator is.
Well, so Cheney called it a pacemaker plus.
Well, he looks on the bright side of everything. He calls drilling in the Alaskan oil refuge conservation plus, you know, so you have to throw a grain of salt over your shoulder when you hear that. I mean, that's it, 41. I'm beginning to feel the isolation of this place.
Used to call it the splendid isolation.
Well, it's not so splendid when it makes you feel so alone. You know, I mean, I prefer my isolation with the company of some trusted friends and advisors.
You could always come up here, share some isolation with Barr and me.
Yeah, I may, but everybody's telling me I got to stay in town. You know, we just got our asses whooped in the Senate on so-called patients' rights.
Yeah, now listen, son, that's not your fault. The Dems have been waiting 8 years to avenge the death of health care. You just happened to be sitting in the big chair when payback time arrived.
Well, you know, I look Tom Daschle in the eye, and I see a fellow who wants payback time to last as long as my term. And I don't mean look him in the eye in person, but, you know, just on TV and stuff. So,
yeah,
it'd be nice to know if old Dickie Cheney's along for the whole ride.
Trying to tell you, you don't have to worry. Cheney's great, sure, but, you know, he wears out. We'll send over somebody just as good.
Not Jim Baker. You promised me once the election is over I could send him to the Middle East and forget about it.
Could call Dr. DeBakey, I suppose, ask him about defibrillation. Little embarrassing, not sure he's still alive.
You know, I was going along with Dick saying this isn't serious and everything, just a procedure type deal, but, you know, then he starts telling me that they got to shave part of his groin to shove a tube up there, and I start thinking, you know, if this ain't serious business he's involved in, then coon dogs don't hunt.
Of course they do, don't they?
Yeah, they do. So, look, I don't know, you must have friends with heart conditions.
Oh, sure. Going to see a couple dozen of them out at the Grove next week.
Well, you know, just maybe quietly ask around for me, see if it's, you know, just an insurance policy, like Dick calls it, or whether we actually need to start getting a first draft of the urology. You know, I mean, his doctor says it's like an emergency room in his chest, and for the life of me, I can't figure out whether that's supposed to be reassuring. I mean, you only go to the emergency room when you've got an emergency, or have I missed something there?
Do what I can. Not supposed to do any business out there. Hey, listen, you want to come up on the 4th, save you a seat in the boat.
You got it. Thanks.
As if someone else controls your very soul. I fool myself long as I can feel the presence of another man. It's there when you speak my name. It's just not the same. Ooh, baby, I'm losing you. It's in the air. It's everywhere. Ooh, baby, I'm losing you. Into your eyes,
reflection of a face I see. I'm hurt, downhearted, and worried, girl, 'cause that face doesn't belong to me.
And finally, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of notes from the international file. For those people who feel that the British have a far greater appreciation for history, a far greater tendency to preserve historic sites, historic buildings, this will come as a rude shock, a rude and a sad shock. The house featured in the Big Brother television series is to be torn down because the television network that produces it failed to secure long-term planning permission for the site. The building in East London, complete with whirlpool bath, 39 hidden cameras, and a chicken coop, will be demolished. Says a spokesman for the Newham Council, they'll have to clear up the area and leave it like it was. In Britain, by the way, Big Brother is a successful show. And this could never happen in the United States, by the way. The Big Brother house can never be condemned by a short-sighted city council because it exists only on the CBS lot. So it'll only be torn down when CBS decides it needs more parking space in the valley. And you may have missed this other note from the international file. One of the signs of very slow but gradual and probably inevitable thaw in relations between the United States and Iran. You know, the Iranians just reelected their supposedly moderate president, although we've been burned before by the quest for Iranian moderates. But anyway, this president seems to be moderately moderate. And one of the signs of the rapprochement is that there is now increasing in popularity in Iran a little game called baseball.
Just a reminder, fans, you want to come out to the stadium this Wednesday night when the Tehran Dodgers start rolling in the dirt with their crosstown rivals, the South Tehran Dodgers. As the season winds down, you know, this exciting three-game series is for all the marbles, including bragging rights for the next year to the name Dodgers. And don't forget, fans, Wednesday night is also Hador night at the stadium. That's right, the first 10,000 women come through the turnstiles will get themselves a free head-to-foot veil with action photos of your favorite Dodgers actually sewn right into the fabric. Yeah, you can show off your team loyalty and your modesty both at the same time. So make a date to be at beautiful Tribute to the Martyrs Stadium this Wednesday night. You'll see exciting Dodgers baseball and grab yourself an official Dodger Hador. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Cidade nasce no fundo do rio. Sou um peixe arredio, caranguejo, siri, jacari, bariri. Meu pé pisou muito barro, mas tirei muito sal. Com a mãe do Amauri, bem perto dali, do Andaraí. E nos domingos de ramos fui eu, sou mais eu, boia de pneu, com a irmã do Aristeu, que prenhas e penhas subindo vai vem na linha do trem. Rio de Janeiro, Rio Presepeiro, Rio Pagodeiro, tem cidade, minha alma canta o pagode, mas o catade não pode cantar nesse bar. Seu Manel, que é? Virgem Maria da Graça, me beija, me abraça, mas não quer me dar. Se namorar é pra casar, é muita areia pro meu caminhão. Mas que suspensão, ai meu som, Cosme Damião, me leva contigo de Kombi ou de van pro Maracanã. Rio de Janeiro, Rio Cascateiro, Rio do Funkeiro.
Me casei com essa cidade bonitinha, sobrinha neta de Estácio de Sá, filha de Cunhambê. Baby, 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 oh, I love you. Mas o meu samba não é de bambu, o bairro tão mais quente pra chuchu. Minha moça bonita,
Rio de Janeiro, Rio Bandoleiro, mocidade.
O corpo do rio se divide em mar, montanha, floresta e algumas, digamos, cascatas. Mas tem uma coisa: a alma é uma só. E nenhum túnel ou via expressa pode dividir essa alma em duas.
Rio de Janeiro, Rio Cascateiro, Rio do Funkeiro.
Me casei com essa cidade bonitinha, sobrinha neta de Estácio de Sá, filha de Cunhambê.
Baby, 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 I love you. Mas o meu samba não é de bambu. O bairro com mais quente pra chuchu. Minha moça bonita, vou pro Lago do Tanque. Lá tem baile funk, tudo sangue bom. Não tem alemão.
Is Santa Monica. I have to say that now because we're the only world service left on shortwave in the United States, so just have to recapitulate a little of the shortwave world servitude experience. Ladies and gentlemen, that completes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it'd be just like the ability to pronounce humiliating without being humiliated if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. No attachments, please. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.